Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. Who better to talk with about intelligence than the man who formerly chaired the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, Congressman Pete Hoekstra. He, at the time, represented with great distinction the people of Michigan's 2nd Congressional District, a role he played from 1993 to 2010. These days, he is a senior fellow, the Shulman Senior Fellow, with the Investigative Project on Terrorism, an absolutely splendid and indispensable organization in Washington, D.C. He also practices with Greenberg and Traurig's Government Law and Policy Practice. Congressman, welcome back. It is always great to have you with us, but rarely more so than at a moment when I'm very anxious to pick your brain about something that happened back when you were chairman and that is now coming to light in a whole new way. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Hey, it's always good to be with you. Thank you, Frank.
You were in the thick of the fight about the weapons of mass destruction question in Iraq in the aftermath of the liberation of the place. There didn't seem to be any, we were told, at least stockpiles of the stuff. The Iraq survey group looking for them came back, and it began feeding into a narrative from a lot of Democrats, most especially, who previously had supported the proposition that we needed to do something about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction program, who suddenly began thinking that they were on the wrong side of that and there was no basis for the war. And ultimately, of course, the meme, Bush lied and people died. Talk a little bit about your perceptions of that, especially in light of what the New York Times reported, that there were chemical weapons, in fact, found there more recently.
Well, it's very interesting, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about this, because when I read this article earlier in the week, it was, I was outraged. There were those of us that were allies of the Bush administration, but we wanted to get to the truth because it's important to understand exactly what's happening so that, when we've got future challenges, we can go through a lessons learned process. There was a heavy debate about what Saddam's capabilities were, what resources he had before we went to war. And now the New York Times, through what appears to be some excellent reporting, which you won't find me saying very often, issues what seems to be a very well-sourced article saying that the military, probably the intelligence community, were well aware of vast stockpiles, and they might have been old, that doesn't matter, but they found vast stockpiles of chemical WMD. And the most striking part here, Frank, is that the military and the Bush administration actively participated and cooperated to make sure that that information never found its way to Congress, never found its way to the American people. And so they withheld information from us. And, that's not optional for the executive branch. That's not a call that they can make and sit around a table and say, are we going to share this with Congress or not?
Pete, let me ask you about how that decision seems to have come about. In 2010, Karl Rove, now a political maven on the outside with immense resources and, the Wall Street Journal column and Fox News platform and so on, actually professed in the Wall Street Journal that the biggest mistake of his time in the White House was his role in preventing that sort of information from being put forward on the grounds that they didn't want to relitigate, as he puts it, the previous controversies about were there or weren't there weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Again, as you say, that actually wasn't something that would be an option if the, you know, respect for Congress and the constitutional role it plays in oversight of the executive branch were followed. What do you make of that admission by Rove? And more to the point, you know, the kind of harm that that calculated decision did to the Bush presidency, as well as really the country.
Well, it did tremendous harm to the Bush presidency. It did tremendous harm to those who supported the president. You know, I can still remember, and you may remember it well, Rick Santorum and I did a press conference back in 2006, not 2010. 2006, after the discovery of roughly 300 to 500 chemical warheads in Iraq. And, you know, Rick Santorum was in the middle of a tough reelection campaign. And within an hour after our press conference, you know, it appears now that under the direction of the White House, the Defense Department attacked Rick Santorum and myself and said, well, you know, that's really irrelevant. Those weren't the shells that we were looking for. And so, you know, Rick and I, you know, just kind of, we looked at each other and said, wow, if this is how your friends are going to treat you, just imagine what the what your enemies are going to do. And so for the next couple of months, we were totally ridiculed. But what we now know is that roughly in the 2006 time frame, they had found thousands of shells at multiple locations. American troops had been injured, and, you know, they were hiding this information at the same time that David Kaye, that the Iraqi Survey Group, and Charles Dilfer, the Senate Intelligence Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, all had active investigations going on as to, you know, what was the status of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And, you know, I have not seen the Karl Rove quote, but if he admits that, you know, he was directing the effort to hide this information, it's like, you know, what they were basically doing is they were telling the military, the intelligence community, to lie and mislead the committees of jurisdiction, the committees that, you know, do the oversight of these agencies, and it's absolutely outrageous. And, you know, lying to Congress, you know, I think you're violating the law. It's criminal.
Congressman, I couldn't agree more, and I worry that people are still relying on Karl Rove's judgment, I must say, because I think that it's likely to continue to cause us harm as a people, and for that matter, as a party. May I switch gears with you on just to turn to another very active problem area, and that is Iraq today. We may have this group, the Islamic State, actually, among other things, having access to those weapons of mass destruction that were left in Iraq, some of them used against our guys, as you say, but some apparently, perhaps thousands of shells, may now have found their way into the hands of this group. It doesn't seem as though the president's strategy is working out very well in terms of either degrading, let alone destroying the Islamic State. What's your assessment of that very quickly, Congressman?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. You know, there it seems to right now kind of be a stalemate in Kobani, northern Syria, but ISIS continues to make progress throughout Al Anbar province in Iraq. They're getting close to the Baghdad airport. You know, with their surface-to-air missiles, they may have the capability soon to be within close enough range that the Iraqis are going to have to take seriously consider closing that airport down, which then endangers the security of the people left in Baghdad.
And that would mean, among others, I'm told by some estimates, 5,000 Americans attached to the U.S. embassy in Baghdad. And, you know, Pete, we've talked over the months about the lessons that were supposed to be learned from Benghazi, for that matter, I guess, go back to the takeover of our embassy in 1979. And it certainly seems as though what's going on at the moment is setting us up for, if anything, a vastly bigger problem for the personnel, military and civilian, that are currently attached to that very large facility. We'll be following it closely, as I know will you, at the Investigative Project on Terrorism. Former U.S. Congressman Pete Hoekstra, Chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, it's never the case that we welcome the bad news that we often have to discuss, but we always certainly welcome you being with us for that conversation, Congressman. You shed great light on these matters, and your expertise and leadership is sorely missed in the Congress these days, but we're always glad to have it with us here. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. Next up, we'll talk with Major General Ken Israel, United States Air Force retired, about electronic warfare. Are we up to the challenges we're facing in that sector? Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Major General Ken Israel, United States Air Force retired, a man who is currently the president of the Executive Committee of the Association of Old Crows, a trade association for those who have specialized in government and in industry in the black art, if you will, of electronic warfare and now increasingly of cyber warfare. Ken has been tapped to become the next president of this illustrious organization, and we're delighted to have him with us in the aftermath of a hugely successful annual convention that the Old Crows had here in Washington recently at the Wardman Park Hotel. General, it is a delight to have you with us, and I'm very grateful to you both for your past service and that you're providing these days with the Association of the Old Crows. Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio, sir.
Well, thank you for having me, and I look forward to an insightful and worthwhile discussion.
I'm not sure that most of us have heard much about it, if indeed we know anything about it at all. You've devoted your life to it, but what, as a practical matter, is electronic warfare in today's national security environment?
Well, it's coming out of the shadows, and so let me give you the working definition that we used in the Pentagon. Back in the early 80s, I was in charge of electronic warfare policy and doctrine. And the definition we used back then, and I think it's still current today, is electronic warfare is action taken in support of military operations against the adversary's electromagnetic spectrum capability. So if you kind of break it into its components, it's focused on the electromagnetic spectrum, and it's active. It's not passive. It's, right. It's active in terms of how we deal with an adversary's use and misuse of the electromagnetic spectrum.
And that spectrum would be basically everything from radio signals and communications to global positioning satellite sort of devices, and I guess now increasingly cyber warfare. We're talking with Ken Israel, a man who has huge experience in the business of electronic warfare as a practitioner, as a policymaker, and now as a leader of the community of people concerned about it outside of government, as well as in as the president of the Association of Old Crows. General Israel, you were telling us a little bit about what the practice of electronic warfare entails. Give us a sense of how well we're doing at it these days, and are we adequately funding the modernization in this part of the battle space, which I gather your audience was told at your recent convention is increasingly probably decisive in our overall conduct of national security?
Good questions, Frank, and it's coming to the forefront right now because we're moving out of the era of kinetic wars and into silicon wars. And we talk about domains. We have an air domain. We have a space domain. We have a land. We have a sea. Now we have a cyber domain. And what you're beginning to see is the conjunction of electronic warfare and cyber, all focused on the same medium that we have to deal with, and that's called the electromagnetic spectrum. You ask how important it is. The very first asset that we had flying over the current conflict in Iraq and Syria was an EA-6. That is an electronic warfare platform, the EA-6. I flew B-66s in Vietnam. I flew B-52s as an electronic warfare officer. And the whole proposition for electronic warfare is it's got to be able to not only neutralize the threat, but it's a capability that simultaneously increases the combat capability of every platform, every sensor, every weapon, every decision maker that uses it.
But this is really across all of those other domains, and as you say, especially in an environment where both nation states and increasingly non-state actors and even individuals have capabilities in this domain, it becomes an increasingly serious challenge. And there have been reports, and I think you've addressed this along the trail, Ken, that we may not even be properly organized for this kind of warfare across all those domains, let alone providing the kinds of resources. Talk a bit about the strategic command role in this business and also the recent findings of the Defense Science Board with respect to the shortfalls in funding for electronic warfare and cyber.
With pleasure. Let me do these in reverse order in terms of your questions. First of all, Dr. Kaminsky, who recently provided an outstanding presentation to our 50th Association of Old Crows symposium that we had at the Park Wardman Hotel, he said that we basically need to add $2 billion a year on top of the current level investment in electronic warfare. Now, to me, I've always been a practitioner and believer, first comes form, then comes function. We're dysfunctional right now in terms of electronic warfare and cyber because our organization isn't streamlined to leverage each of the capabilities that we just talked about, electronic warfare and cyber. You have one command, STRATCOM, responsible for the doctrine and policy, but they have very few resources to implement that doctrine and policy. On the other hand, you have the Cyber Command, and there are plenty of resources there, but the division of effort, roles, and responsibilities hasn't been worked out at the highest level. So what Dr. Kaminsky proposed was having an executive committee co-chaired by Frank Kendall, who's the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, working with the Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral James Sandy Winnefield, to try to go ahead and get their arms around how to optimize what the significant capability this country has in terms of electronic warfare and cyber working together to maximize and optimize our warfighting capability, because there is one overarching principle. In the future, the speed of information must exceed the speed of engagement.
And what you've really put your finger on, I think, is our adversaries understand this. In fact, we're hearing every day there's a new group that I believe the FBI has just been warning of called Axiom, Chinese government operated, as best we can tell, a hacking operation that has really been doing huge damage in terms of cyber spying. And this is not something we can take for granted, that we have dominance, and we're going to have to work hard at it. And a sort of flip side of this coin, and we're almost out of time, but could you comment very quickly on comments made by the director of the FBI, Jim Comey, yesterday at the Brookings Institution, to the effect that our private sector is now improving its counter cyber capabilities in terms of encryption in a way that is actually crippling law enforcement and other government security agencies from adequately monitoring what's happening in this space?
Well, as the old saying goes, sometimes the cure is worse than the problem you're dealing with. And in this case, if you over-classify, if you develop mission assurance, encryption, trusted devices that limit the flexibility, the resilience, the agility of the operator, it's going to be very difficult to develop not only the trust, but the velocity of information that you're going to have to deal with in the future, because we're no longer dealing with hours, we're dealing with seconds. And we talk about growing cyber warriors, but we need to move to the automation, because there's just not enough time for humans to get into this decision loop. And one last comment. By 2025, in a report put out by the former chief scientist of the Air Force, Dr. Mark Mayberry, he said by 2025, the Chinese will produce 2 times the number of computer sciences that we are graduating in the United States.
It'll be interesting to see how many of them are being graduated from U.S. academic institutions.
Exactly.
As well as their own. I'm afraid we have to leave it at that for the moment, Ken Israel, but this is really an important topic, and we salute again both what you're doing with the Association of Old Crows to try to help the rest of us understand the priority it should enjoy, and to the extent that we are not giving it that priority, the real national security vulnerabilities that are going to be exposed and surely exploited by our adversaries. We also appreciate, of course, your past service to our country in uniform. Thank you, General. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, we will be talking with Charles Faddis about another threat, Ebola. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, the New York Times editorialized on a story it reported the day before about the George W. Bush administration allowing some of Saddam Hussein's chemical weapons to remain in Iraq and, as a result, to be used against American troops. Incredibly, having previously promoted the false narrative that Bush lied and people died, the paper still insists that President Bush was wrong in claiming Saddam had chemical weapons, even as it reveals that thousands of them were discovered in post-liberation Iraq. Ironically, the president's own top political advisor, Karl Rove, allowed the Times and its fellow partisans to get away with the earlier meme to the great detriment of the Bush presidency and our country. He has since called that his biggest mistake. The question occurs, should anyone trust Rove's judgment now? This is Frank Effney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them.
When you make fun of them.
When you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Charles Faddis. Today he is the president of Orion Strategic Services, LLC. But in the past, he has held a number of very interesting positions, including that of a CIA operations officer and, until he retired in 2008, as the head of the Central Intelligence Agency's Weapons of Mass Destruction Terrorism Unit. He is an author, quite accomplished, both in fiction and in nonfiction. In the nonfiction category, Willful Neglect, The Dangerous Illusion of Homeland Security. And we're particularly interested in talking about insights of the present crisis with Ebola for the national security and homeland security in particular. Charles Faddis, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So we have this epidemic that is now wreaking havoc in West Africa, primarily, but has begun leaching into the West, including Spain and now the United States, and in a manner that very, very rapidly is signaling the complexities of countering this sort of phenomenon. And before we turn to what it might be telling us about our preparedness to deal with man-caused outbreaks of these kinds of diseases, or perhaps engineered diseases, talk a little bit about the insights from what we've seen so far, Charles, about the homeland defense against this outbreak of Ebola.
Right. Well, you know, I think in a lot of professions or in a lot of areas of life, there is a big difference between talking a good game and then actually being able to execute and perform. And I think, you know, what we have seen here is that we have a lot of people that call press conferences and assure us of all sorts of things. And then step by step, at each juncture where something needs to be done, you know, the ball gets dropped. It gets fumbled. And you look at this and you say, okay, so, you know, you're now working on protocols, or you're now figuring out how to incinerate soiled linens from people with contagious diseases and these kinds of things. Every one of these things is something that you should have worked out a long time ago, and you should have exercised, you know, in the way that the military would exercise in preparation for something. And in fact, obviously, none of it's ever been done. We're just, we're now making it up as we go along. And I find that very, very disconcerting.
It's disconcerting to a lot of Americans, I can tell you, as they hear one story after the next that seems more incredible, including things like having this Ebola victim sitting in a waiting room at the ER in Dallas after he was clearly symptomatic and therefore presumably a hazard of the first order to the people around him. And I think your point is so well taken, Charles Faddis, that if we had even a serious approach to epidemics, let alone biowarfare, we would be making much more rigorous preparations for these kinds of eventualities. You've been in the business of assessing, of course, the kinds of threats of biological, bioengineered weaponry, most especially. And again, just if you would, talk a little bit about what would seem to be another example of real willful neglect of great danger to the homeland and its people.
Right. Well, what we have here with all of everything that's going on in the United States right now, as we're speaking, basically in regard to Ebola, is related to a single individual who arrived here with Ebola. And yet at this point, we now have airlines, you know, notifying 750 people that flew on 7 different flights of potential exposure. I mean, this is all coming from one guy who brought himself to the emergency room. Now, in the sort of realm of people who deal with the threat of bioterrorism, one of the concepts that is frequently considered is what's referred to as biomartyrs, which basically amounts to sort of the functional equivalent of a suicide bomber using biological agents. In other words, you have a terrorist group that deliberately infects, say, 12 of its individuals with a communicable disease, something like the plague, particularly if we're talking pneumatic form where it's in your lungs. And then you just turn them loose in the United States, and they don't go to the emergency room. They just deliberately put themselves in proximity to as many people as possible, you know, jump on the New York subway and ride it all day. And no announcements. And so then you would have, say, days later, all of the people that have been exposed with no knowledge of what has happened to them begin to wash up in emergency rooms all over the United States, potentially, by which point you would, by the time you realize you've been attacked, you potentially have 1,000 people that have been exposed. Now, look at our response and how inept it has been to one person. Mm-hmm. And then conceptualize that in a dozen major cities, you now have 1,000 people who have themselves, by this point, already probably infected other folks. And you see that we're not even in the ballpark. I mean, I'm laughing. It's not funny. I'm laughing because it's so sad. We are not even arguably beginning to be ready for this, and yet we have theoretically been preparing for it for at least a dozen years, mm-hmm. since 2002.
But it comes down to, as you say, Charles Faddis, to talking a good game or writing impressive reports on what needs to be done, but not necessarily taking the next step to actually put resources against these things and train to contend with them and otherwise implement the recommendations. And again, Charles Faddis is the president of Orion Strategic Services, LLC, and a former CIA operations officer with deep experience with the WMD terrorism challenge from his time at the agency. And Charles, let me just ask you, if I could, a very hot topic, if I can use that term, given the hot zones that we're worrying about at the moment, is do we keep people from coming to the United States through flight restrictions or visa restrictions or through other means talk a little bit about where you come down on that as a prophylactic measure to at least try to contain this problem. And also, if you would address at the same time the fact that quite apart from what we do with respect to these flights, as the commander of Southern Command recently pointed out, General John Kelly, if we don't do something about securing this border and this stuff washes up, as you put it, in Central America, well, he said, Katie, bar the door.
Yeah, well, there's this long discussion, this big discussion that's going on in the press and with the administration about some sort of controversy about whether or not we should stop people from coming here from West Africa. I mean, and all sorts of what I consider to be completely nonsensical, incomprehensible explanations for why we shouldn't do it. I mean, there is no good reason not to do this. This is one of the very first things that should have been done. If we start having additional cases coming here, they will finally do it. But of course, as is typical, they will do it too late. If you want the ultimate evidence for this, look at what the other West African nations have done that are bordering the countries where the infection is really spreading. They have all sealed their borders. They did that a long time ago, instantaneously, as a matter of common sense. No, you're coming from an area where the infection is spreading. You cannot come here. Tangled up in some sort of political correctness thing. I have no idea. And I think the general you referenced in terms of from Southcom commander is absolutely correct. I mean, you have people already flocking north because of gang violence and poverty and all sorts of other issues. My God, if you have an epidemic raging through there, you are going to have a stampede. And, you know, and let's just say outright that you cannot be serious about national security and really claim that you're protecting the country and have a border that just any average person from Central America can manage to penetrate.
Very quickly, and we've got less than a minute left, Charles Faddis, should we be putting National Guard troops on that border rather than sending them, as the president seems to have in mind now, to West Africa?
Well, I think there's probably utility to put National Guard troops there, but I also think there's utility to changing the law and stopping allowing people to come in here and then be released into the country. If you turn them around and send them back, that would shut off the magnet.
Charles, we have to leave it at that for the moment. I hope you'll come back to us on this as well as on so many other issues that you've followed so closely, both in your career in government and now at Orion Strategic Services. Your book, Willful Neglect, The Dangerous Illusion of Homeland Security, is really required reading if we're serious about this business, and we certainly are here. Thank you, sir, for your service. Come back to us again very soon.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Carolyn Glick, the extraordinary columnist for the Jerusalem Post and author, most recently, of The Israeli Solution, a one-state plan for peace in the Middle East. She's a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Carolyn, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us.
Well, it's great to be on the program.
I'm particularly pleased to be able to congratulate you personally and on air for one of the great hat tricks, which was the publication in the New York Times today, of all places, of an essay by you in which you were able to make an argument that is, well, not generally associated with the editorial line of the New York Times, to say the least. Talk a little bit about it.
I got a request through my publisher of my book, The Israeli Solution, from the New York Times asking me to participate in this debate. I thought, well, all right, I guess so. And so I wrote it up and sent it off, and lo and behold, they published it. It's very nice when things work out that way. So, I mean, the problem with the debate is that it's itself, the question is loaded against Israel, and which is what we're seeing more and more of these days, which is that they put out a debate, are you for or against recognizing the non-existent state of Palestine? And then, you know, they stack the decks, they have four people who are for it and two people who are against it, more or less. And that's that, and we're debating a topic that is inherently hostile to Israel, so that, you know, the entire discourse is being conducted on a level where Israel can't win. And that's really the biggest problem, because the anti-Israel forces in the media and in diplomacy and in many, many other very, very important and influential circles are ill-disposed to Israel as a matter of course, and in fact, being anti-Israel has really become a litmus test for entering into much of what passes as the intellectual elite in the Western world today, and the policy elite and the social elite in the Western world.
And describe how that's manifesting itself, Caroline, in particular with respect to some of these votes being taken, notably and overwhelmingly, to my astonishment, in the British Parliament.
Well, Britain's gone. I mean, that's unfortunately the truth, is that even today I saw an article from some Labour member of Parliament from the Labour Party saying the Labour Party has basically been taken over by Islamists who are posing as moderates, and they're not. And what they do is they have the get out the vote campaigns, they bring the vote, and then before you know it, your entire party has become obedient and dependent upon the votes of people who want to overthrow your form of government. And so, you know, that's one of the problems. And the other thing is just that, you know, there is so much anti-Semitism in Europe, and it went into remission, at least publicly, for 5 decades after the Holocaust, but now it's back in full force. And so what we're seeing now is mainstream Europeans are now openly trucking with out-and-out anti-Semites and agreeing that really the world would be a better place if Israel didn't exist. So we're really at a point we haven't been at before in the history of Israel, certainly in the history of the Jewish people we have many times, but this is a very dangerous time, which is also, to be perfectly frank, a reason that I felt that I couldn't say no to the New York Times, even though they asked me to write on one of the Jewish high holidays. I just felt that it was necessary, because if we're already given the opportunity, which is so rare, to address a liberal audience, then, you know, I just have to do it.
I'm glad you did, Carolyn. Let me ask you about whether you believe what's really happening now is kind of, well, anti-Semitism dressed up as anti-Zionism or anti-Israelism.
Look, I think that it's undeniable that anti-Israel and anti-Israelism and anti-Semitism are two sides of the same coin, if you will. I mean, they're really even the same side of the same coin. And it's not that Israel is held to a double standard. Israel is held to a unique standard that is completely, it's not just that it's absurd, it's evil. Because what we're told is that, you know, as British military personnel are being beheaded in the streets of Great Britain by jihadists, they're saying that the most important thing to do is to stick it to the Jews and to wage economic and political warfare against the Jewish state in support of jihadists who want to annihilate the Jewish people.
Among other infidels, including the Brits, as you've indicated,
right, but,
Caroline.
You know, look, I mean, even Secretary of State John Kerry, I believe it was yesterday, he made a stunning statement that the reason why there are so many Western recruits to ISIS is because Israel is building homes for Jews in Jerusalem. You know, this is the American government saying this, it's not just that it's nonsense, it's evil, because it's blaming the Jews for things that are demonstrably completely unrelated to us. And that really harkens back to the basic tenets of anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, that behind every problem is a Jew.
The elders of
that's
Zion.
Responsible. The elders of Zion, exactly. And this is now being propagated not only by the British Parliament, but by the U.S. Secretary of State.
This is incitement, really. On top of being malfeasance on the part of a U.S. official, it is really, if not calculated, it is predictably going to compound the problem, not just in Europe and elsewhere, but also, of course, in your neighborhood.
I mean, I don't think that you can deny that there's also a connection with a lot of the anti-Semitic violence that's been going on in the United States. You know, you just had an attack on a Jewish delicatessen in New York, and you've had Jewish families attacked on their way home from synagogue in New York twice already in the last couple of months. So, I mean, these are things that you really, I mean, when they happened, they were so outrageous, and now they just seem to be happening more and more often in America. And so, yeah, I mean, this is a growing problem in the United States as well, not only in Europe.
Carolyn Glick, again, is our guest. She is a columnist with the Jerusalem Post. She is the author of, most recently, The Israeli Solution. And Carolyn, let me just ask you to kind of calibrate, what did you make, what did your countrymen and women make of the fundraiser for Hamas that took place recently, most munificently responded to by the Qataris, but also by the rest of the world?
And the Americans gave $212 million supplemental over the $500 million that they give already to the Palestinians, including training Palestinian military forces every year. And the European Union gave $586 million. Look, you know, at a certain point, you just start saying, bring it on, because what are you supposed to do? The blows just keep on falling. And I think that, you know, Jack Straw, the former foreign minister of Britain, whose district actually, he's a Labour member of parliament, and his district has an enormous number of Islamists in it. Anyway, Jack Straw gave a stridently anti-Semitic speech in parliament before the pro-Palestine resolution was passed, so lopsidedly in Britain last week, and he said, or this week, he said, the Israeli government only understands pressure. You know, the thing is that people think that they're pressuring Israelis when they do these kinds of things, but really at a certain point, and that point has already been passed, I think, to a large degree, unbeknownst to these anti-Israel activists posing as diplomats, the Israelis have already gotten past that point where it's possible to really convince the public that we should give in to this, because we've seen with the wars in Lebanon in 2006, after 6 years after we vacated South Lebanon at the urging of the international community, and then the war, and the three wars we faced from Hamas and Gaza since we vacated Gaza in August of 2005, that any time that we bow to their pressure and we do what they tell us we have to do in order to receive their support and approval, we're more and more in danger. And so the price of succumbing to their pressure is much higher than any momentary benefit we might gain from doing so. So I think they've already passed the Rubicon, and they're at the point where pressure is less and less effective. They don't have a constituency to speak of anymore among the Israeli electorate. People just had it.
Well, this may be the one upside of all the travails that Israel is being subjected to.
It certainly is an upside, is that we become much more resilient and much more immune to this kind of extortionary.
And much more united is the point. Carolyn, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you for taking time. I wish you a good Shabbos, and thank you for your extraordinary contribution to the New York Times. Keep that
who
up.
Knew, right?
Up.
Who would ever think you'd said that to me, right?
I can't imagine. Anyway, congratulations. We'll talk with you
take
soon.
Care.
We'll talk
have
with the rest
day.
Of you again, I hope, next week. Till then, thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.